Blog Talk Radio.
One night Farmer Brown was taking the air, locked up the barn and with the greatest of care. Hen house, something stirred when he hollered, "Who's there?" This is what he heard: "There ain't nobody here but us chickens. Ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself, stop all that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us." He kindly point that gun the other way and holler, holler, holler up and hit here but us chickens. Up an awful dust. We chickens trying to sleep and you butt in. And hobble, 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 hobble with your chin, cause tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay. Ground to dig and worm to scratch. Thanks a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch, cause there ain't nobody here but us chickens, done. Nobody at all. So quiet yourself.
You're listening to Nonprofit Radio, FM 97.3, KZAC LP Sacramento, 104.9 FM, KGIG LP Modesto Ripon, RFM 93.3, KPHD LP Modesto Series.
Welcome to today's edition of The Backstory with former Mayor Carmen Sabatino, with news and information you will not read in the local paper or hear on area radio and TV. The Backstory presents an insider's view of what's really happening on a local political scene. And now, let's join your host, Carmen Sabatino, to learn The Backstory.
Well, good morning and welcome to a great day in Modesto. I thought it was going to rain today, but Dave, we got sunshine.
We do got sunshine. I'm not wearing a jacket for the first time.
Yeah, we had a little rain last night, though. But that's okay. We
yeah.
Rain.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday we talked about our bumper music, about there ain't nobody here but us chickens. And besides being former city councilman Bruce Froman's mother's favorite song. That's how he said his mother's. I guess she sang that while she was cooking chicken. But anyhow, we had we chose that bumper music, and the analogy is it's sort of a tribute to a local celebrity. His name is George Petrolakis. George is a land use attorney here in Modesto. And he's been very active for 30 years, primarily on the political scene. I first came in contact with George in 1985. He was a campaign manager for me at the time when I ran for city council. And I've seen campaigns where George has represented two candidates in the same race.
No way.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, anyhow, George has had a long career, and the reason for his political actions, his political activity, is to advance the cause of land developers, primarily Mike Zagaris, and other developers in the city. And he's very good at it. So, this year I've sort of decided that this city is, well, I can use the terms, it's for sale or rent, and maybe it's been like that for decades. I don't know what we can do about it, but so I use the analogy of the fox in the hen house, and of course in the cast of characters, George Petrolakis is the fox, and we are the chickens, and we are the taxpayers.
sometimes the farmer getting lied to.
Well, we still have to find out who the farmer is.
The one that's taking the word of the fox and walking away without checking?
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah, there's plenty of farmers out there who are convinced that they should lay down their shotguns because they believe the fox. Well, this isn't, if you're sympathetic to animals, and maybe we shouldn't laugh about this, especially if you love foxes. In an article on March 13th, the headline is, "Chickens Gang Up to Kill Intruder Fox on French Farm." Chicken in a school farm in northwestern France are believed to have grouped and killed a juvenile fox. The unusual incident in Brittany took place after the fox entered the coop with 3,000 hens through an automatic hatch door, which closed immediately. Well, not only could the chickens not get out, the fox couldn't get out. There was a herd instinct, and they attacked him with their beaks, said Pascal Daniel, head of farming at the Agricultural School of Grosjeanne. The body of the small fox was found the following day in a corner of the coop. You know, you stop and think about it. That's sort of horrific. I mean, that's something you don't want to watch.
I feel bad for the fox. I know, I feel bad.
You know, I don't want to watch this. The body of the small fox, Pascal said it had blows to its neck and blows from beaks. The farm is home to up to 6,000 free-range chickens who are kept in a 5-acre site. The coop is kept open during the day, and most of the hens spend the daytime outside.
When I lived in Turlock, I raised chickens. I had 4 chickens in the backyard, and if a cat would get in the backyard, they would surround that cat and kick it out of the yard. Their chickens are they're little dinosaurs, I tell you. They are. They're not helpless.
Well, I don't know if there's any, say, projection to this story, except us chickens, George, we hope there are plenty of farmers out there who know who you are. So we'll be talking more about that. You know, we did want to talk this morning a little bit about the gap between the top 1% and the top 20% in our population. The poverty gap, I guess we should call it. But the system that we have, I'm not going to give it a name. I'm not going to call it capitalism, socialism. I'm not going to give the system a name. I don't know how you describe a system and then attach a label to it. All I know is what the results of what, however you want to describe this system, the results are not good. The gap between the rich and the poor has grown tremendously. And for example, Dave, I think this graph shows what happened here.
Yeah, it shows the bottom 20% are down around zero. And then you got this jump 20 to 40%, $100,000, 40 to 60%, still about $150,000, 60 to 80%, I'd say $100,000. Then you got your top 20% of your earners in this country, and that's about $300,000. What the surprise comes is the top isn't the top 20%. It's the top 1%, and they're making almost $2 million. So the jump between the bottom 20 and the top 20 is meager. It's the top 1% that's bringing them that's taking all the money.
And quite frankly, let's be honest about it, Mr. Trump has taken care of the top 1%. You know, my favorite story is that, you know, taxes are a way of controlling the system. The argument is that increased taxes stifle growth, while if we take taxes and lower them, that will increase the economy and benefit the economy, because more money will be put into the system. But here we have the top 1%, and what did you say, 3 million?
Yeah.
Okay.
I say that goes across. That's fair.
All right. Yeah. Well, I don't know how much money that group can put into the economy. I know that the lower groups are putting money into the economy because they have to buy groceries, and they may not buy yachts, but they do have to be consumers no matter how much money they're bringing in.
It depends whether you buy into trickle-down economics or not. I don't.
Okay, you're saying that trickle-down is give it to the top people and they'll trickle it down.
Yeah, they'll buy yachts, and the yachts people pay their vendors, et cetera, et cetera. It'll eventually trickle down. I don't buy that. I think it's been disproven.
Well, the bottom line is that, I want an example. Mr. Trump just, you know what? Somebody said, well, why don't you call him president? I guess he deserves the title, but I certainly don't want to dirty the word president. Trump has proven himself to be a leader that is not going to receive great honors in history. And when this is all written up 25 years from now, there is nothing honorable about what's going on today with, I'll go ahead and call him the president, or Donald, whatever. But, he gives, for example, the cut in taxes that he gave us, of course, was quite substantial for huge corporations. For example, General Motors took a great savings in taxes and within a few months announces that they're laying off 15,000 workers at one of their plants.
Yeah, that Chevy Cruze plant.
Right. So, you know, we've got a situation where our system, whatever you want to call it, is creating poor people. And our discussion about poor people often ends up with, what are we going to do about the homeless? So we create the homeless, and then we want them taken out of our eyesight. Don't care what you do with them, but just, we don't want to see them. We'll just throw them under the bridge. Remember the expressions? That expression meant throw them under the bridge. That's been going on for decades. And ironically, here in Modesto, we've done exactly that. Well, there has been, let's see, there's some statistics here that the top 1% of earners in the United States in 2015, a family would have to have brought in $421,000 in pre-tax dollars. What qualifies as the top 1% varies by each state, and the state with the highest thresholds are, this is where the rich people are, California, Connecticut, District of Columbia, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York. Nationwide, the average income of the bottom 99% is $50,000 per family. And this also varies by geography. You know, by looking at income data on the state and county level, it's possible to get a more local picture of the trend. trend of inequality. Often the conversation would turn to, well, that's New York City, it's not my state, said Mark Price, a labor economist at the Keystone Research Center and co-author of the PI paper. Rising inequality affects virtually every part of the country, not just large urban areas or financial districts. It's a persistent problem throughout the country, in big cities and small towns in all 50 states. So when we disclose or we talk about a situation, let's say here in Modesto, here in Stanislaus County, the phrase that is most used is, well, it happens everywhere. As if that excuses what's happening here and now. It's okay because it's like this everywhere. But between the years 2009 to 2015, that income grew, faster than the incomes of the bottom 99. So while the rich are getting richer, the poor aren't keeping up with their status. The district the income growth of the top 1% was half or more of all the income growth in that time period. CEO pay has increased about 20 times the typical worker's pay to 271 times greater from 1965 to 2016. So, CEOs, chief executive officers, are walking away with millions of dollars even after their companies have gone bankrupt.
Yeah, a lot of massive failures, disorganization. The Wells Fargo CEOs that left in succession afterwards. Golden parachutes isn't the word for it.
Well,
golden hang gliders.
One banker I talked to said that Wells Fargo, we know that Wells Fargo, I think they had a $263 million fine. And in that same time period, they made $1.2 billion in profits off of the scandalous activities they were engaged in. And I think, do we have a clip on, should we use Elizabeth Warren, or is there that senator... Sask, I think his name was.
I think it was. I'll play that one for you.
Yeah, let's play. And what was his name?
I don't know.
Well, they'll introduce him now.
All
right, it's a 5-minute interrogation on the Wells Fargo CEO.
Senator Schatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sloan, the OCC has the statutory authority to revoke a national charter of a bank if the bank is found to violate the National Bank Act. Why shouldn't the OCC consider revoking your charter?
Senator, because we provide products and services to 1 out of 3 American households. We've talked about many mistakes that we've made. But today, more oftentimes than not, we do that appropriately. The company is growing. The company provides jobs to 270,000 people.
So you're too big?
No, we're not too big at all. I'm just reinforcing that every day we have 270,000 team members that go out and satisfy
the needs.
That
sounds like what you said, is that the reason that your charter shouldn't at least be considered for revocation is the first thing out of your mouth was your size.
No, the first thing out of my mouth was our customers, that we serve one out of every three customers. We take that responsibility very seriously. When you look at the bank in totality today, we're doing many more things right than we are wrong, but I appreciate that today we're talking about Wells Fargo 1 year later and the changes that I've...
Sure. I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off.
Sure,
because I want to go 5 minutes only. That does sound to me like too big. I guess we'll allow the members of the panel and the audience to make a judgment about whether your answer sufficed. I'm not an expert in banking, so I want you to explain this to somebody back home.
Mm-hmm.
You made $21 billion in profits last year. You made a nice salary. I don't want to personalize this. Your board makes better than a nice amount of money. You were COO when a lot of this went down, and now you're CEO. So explain to the man on the street why this is fair.
Senator, I'm not 100% sure I know what you mean by this, but let me...
You get a promotion. I mean, all the people in charge get lots and lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not all the consumers, but lots of consumers get harmed. So just explain to me in plain English why this is fair.
Senator, I've taken responsibility for the mistakes that have been made at the company. I'm taking action in my role as CEO to make Wells Fargo a better bank than it was a year ago. It'll be a better bank in the future. We're taking concrete action, and we're providing. I'm proud of the fact that our bank is the largest small business lender, the largest home lender. We make a difference to Americans every day.
Back to
you deserve. You deserve the right.
I only have two more minutes.
Sure.
It just occurs to me that it's only in financial services, it's only in this industry where people can make such massive errors and there doesn't appear to be accountability. And only because of your size do we not understand totally which statutory tools, which regulatory tools, which consumer-based tools we have at our disposal to find a remedy. At a briefing for our staff, Wells Fargo representatives explained that the banks would make goodwill payments to customers who had their cars repossessed and their credits credit trashed as a result of auto insurance that you bought for them. As I understand it, the bank will designate a third-party claim administrator and ask customers to send in a form explaining how they were harmed and how much money they need to be made whole. According to your representatives, the claims are basically going to be paid up to $2,000, sort of no questions asked. So then my question is, why not just cut checks up to $2,000 for all of those impacted? Because the only reason I can think of putting the burden on consumers to ask for this goodwill money that you've already approved is that you're hoping many of them won't do it. So can I have your commitment to go ahead and presumptively push out the money rather than force people to figure out that they have this right and that they're likely to be approved up to $2,000, but they got to go through the paperwork? Can I have your commitment today?
No. What you have my commitment is that we are making the $500 goodwill payment to every one of those customers, whether they were impacted or not, and you have my commitment that we will make sure that we'll make it right for those customers to the extent they were impacted. If we need to do more than $2,000 to make it right, we will do that.
Can you please provide the committee with a list of all legislation that Wells Fargo has lobbied for or against since 2010?
We'll respond to whatever inquiry you'd like us to respond to.
That's my
Senator.
Inquiry, if you could respond in writing for
sure.
The committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
There you go.
Well, isn't it interesting about the offer to make their victims whole, but won't tell their victims that there's a way and a process for getting a couple of $1,000.
And putting the onus on the victims to have to prove that they were harmed.
Well, you know, a few years back, and I think maybe we ought to point to that in our archives of what the city of Los Angeles did, and they led the way by suing Wells Fargo. And because they won that case, the $2,000 payment was agreed to, and that's what the Senator Schatz was saying there. We will you make a commitment to give the money that was promised, apparently, through the court action to your victims? Well, why don't we play a clip here and their victim, see what how they reacted to how they were treated by Wells Fargo.
This is hair-raising.
Before we go to the hearings, joining us right now, one of the victims of the Wells Fargo scheme, that is Linda Edwards. Linda, welcome to the program. I want to get to this quickly. I want you to tell us what happened. They opened fake accounts in your name and your daughter's name. Then what happened to you?
Well, we went to the bank to investigate these accounts, and they told us that they were auto-generated in a computer glitch. We asked to see copies of the applications, and they weren't able to produce any. So this was the summer that my daughter was entering college, and in an effort just to clear up all the issues, we paid the credit card charges, and we closed all of the accounts. And then in follow-up, we wrote a letter to Wells Fargo requesting that any negative credit information be removed from her credit report. That's all we asked.
Did you get harassing phone calls, I think, from bill collectors?
We did. We did. They were attempting to collect what they said was an unpaid credit card debt, but Kate never owned a credit card, so we were very confused by that.
And how long did this go on for?
It went on all summer.
I mean, if I say they made your life hell throughout the summer, am I exaggerating?
For the summer and longer than that. I wish I had the thousands of hours back that we dedicated to clearing her credit.
It was, seriously?
Yes.
Thousands of hours
yes.
to clear her credit name?
Yes.
And how long was it before you got satisfaction, if I can put it like that?
We still don't have satisfaction. We don't know if Wells Fargo pulled that information from her credit report.
Okay. Before we go to the hearing, I want to ask you, Linda, what would you do with Mr. Stumpf, who is the CEO of Wells Fargo and about to testify?
Well, Stuart, I'm a sailor, and there's an old saying that says, when the ship's in trouble, you look to the bridge. So, you know, I think the customers will take care of that, and hopefully the Congress will create some sort of avenue for consumers who have been scammed.
But what punishment would you like to see for Wells Fargo? They've been fined $185 million. What more do you want?
Well, I'd like to see the people who were scammed helped. I mean, I formerly worked for the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. I know the process of consumer protection. I have filed complaints through the Consumer Financial Protection Board. They had two shots at helping me. They didn't help. The only help I got was when I went to Senator Menendez when I learned that he was on the banking committee.
Okay.
Unconscionable.
Well, it's still going on.
It is.
You know, I was talking to a banker, and he apparently years back, not the Bank of California, but Bank of America was number one, bragged about it, you know. And they fell into a few problems. Then Wells Fargo became number one. You would have thought they would have learned their lesson, but maybe if you're number one, you shouldn't brag about it. You know, just go ahead. But not only did they brag about, talking about Wells Fargo, not only did they brag about being number one, they told everybody how they did it by opening up fake accounts, opening up escrows, fake escrows, or even real escrows. And this has sort of been a thing with me since 2014, so every once in a while I enjoy talking about it. Hopefully these senators or people that are running for office now will take up the cause and expose Wells Fargo and prevent them from doing what they're doing. Hey, it's time to leave, but tomorrow we have an introduction again of a committee headed by George Petrobeck and Jim DeMartini to start the political feast. We'll be here tomorrow at 11. Thanks for listening. Hey.
awful dust. We chickens trying.